There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19.
Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this podcast.
For joining us for Be Our Geek, where everyone is a geek about something and where we cover your pop culture landscape through our geek lens. I am Ms. Shannon, here with my regular co-host and podcast life mate, Jayton Satia, the executive director of the Twin Cities Film Fest. How is your social distancing efforts going, Mr. Satia?
Oh, it's going great. Even within our household, we're social distancing. There's only so much of each other we can have, So my son literally went downstairs to watch TV. My wife and I watched something that we wanted to watch. And then I slept on the couch because I actually just wanted to, because I actually like the harder surface and our bed is too soft. I wanted to wake up early to go work out. So I actually purposely slept on the couch. So she was sleeping in her room. He was sleeping in his room. That was social distancing sitting all over the place.
So it has been a surprising benefit, this need to social distance.
You got to make it positive. You have to make everything positive. So we're doing our best. Now everything is going well.
The fact that you are already on your five-year-old's nerves, that's amazing. So...
Oh, totally. He literally told me the other day, he was like, Papa, go to your room. And I'm like, cool, dude. Cool. I'm going to my room.
Nice.
Everything with you.
We are doing well. I mean, the Paul household is already pretty spread out. It's just me and the 12-year-old and the cat. So we are quite able to get away from each other if we do. And he is a very appropriate tween in that he vacillates between thinking mom is the coolest person ever and then going uber emo. And it really only takes about 60 seconds to go from one to the next. I am accustomed to him kicking me out of his room. So that happens.
And you're talking about your cat.
Nope. The cat follows me around all day. The cat,
all
like,
day.
Yeah, all day, every day. The cat's like, what you got? What you doing? Other than that, we're doing okay. I am very excited to be able to talk to you and check in and see what's going on. I know that we are doing some adjustments with some of the content at the Twin Cities Film Fest, and so we'll talk about that as well. But continuing on with what we started last week, the other side benefit of what is going on amidst all of the COVID-19 chaos is that a number of our friends who we normally had a difficult time getting on our podcast suddenly have free time. So they were people that always were like, yeah, I'm willing to be on your show and that'd be great. And then as Jayton said, scheduling just never worked out. And now people are saying yes, amazingly enough. Moving into that realm, our guest today, a friend of mine, and Jayton, I think that you are going to truly enjoy him, my good friend, Dave Barsky. So Dave, hello to Jayton. I'm glad that I got to introduce you to my podcast life mate.
Well, hello, Jayton. And, thank you for having me on. I'm really, really happy to be here, actually.
Now, just to bring everybody up to speed, Dave Barsky is one of those friends that I met in a group environment because I ran into him first at the local Doctor Who convention here in the Twin Cities console room. So last year, and I'll be honest with you, I think he doesn't remember this, so I probably shouldn't remind him. I think I was a little mean to him in the bar because I'd had wine and he comes across a little bro-y when you first meet him. But then we got past that and now we're friends and everything has been great.
Is that your recollection, David?
I don't know. Well, first of all, I do remember it was the bar, of course. That's always a good start, if you remember it was the bar.
Right. True.
But I didn't think you were mean. A little standoffish, I would say.
Okay. Fair enough. That is a kind way of you to put that. Okay. I will give
but
you
if
that.
I've never considered myself bro-y, although other people, I guess, it's a matter of perspective, I guess.
True.
But I was drinking wine myself. How bro-y is that? It was not like I had a stein of beer or something.
You're from Los Angeles, so you met a Minnesotan. I'm not sure if you met a Minnesotan before.
He'd been here before.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, is that why he was so bro-y? Because he was from L.A.?
Maybe, because he lives in L.A., but he's not from L.A., so he has all of the coastal energy. I feel like I was like, why are you asking me questions?
Well, listen, I've lived in Los Angeles for 27 years now, I believe, 28. I'm originally from Boston, so I still retain that. I mean, right. I'm a total Boston dude. There's no question. People in L.A. don't know what to think of me, sometimes. They can't take it. So I'm cool with that, though. But Minneapolis actually is one of my favorite cities in the United States, if not the world. I love the people there. I love the food there. I actually worked out of an office there for a few months back in 2014. And I really grew to love it.
Well, we are always happy to have you back. And hopefully that happens again very soon. The other thing about Dave is he's also one of those friends. And Jayden, this will make sense to you because we have a couple of these friends that you meet them in a particular setting. And then after you get to know them longer, you're like, wait, you do what? Because along with the fact that we're going to talk about his particular passion today, or one of his particular passions today, that we do have to remind people that Dave Barsky is definitely one of the coolest people we know because he has the coolest job that is a job that we always have to get people to explain to us because he's like an executive producer for a lot of shows that we think are fantastic, including his recent one, Straight Up with Steve Austin. But he doesn't lead with that because none of our friends lead with they do cool stuff. And then you hang out with them for a while and you're like, wait, what's your job? Because you presume you meet them in a setting and everybody works in IT and none of our friends work in IT. So Dave, and you are not the only person I've ever asked this question to. I was also very rude and asked Justin Kirk, who was the executive producer for a film that was being showcased last year at the Twin Cities Film Fest. What does an executive producer do? Is what we want to know. What do you do?
I really wish I knew, actually. I feel like I'm faking it half the time. I mean, these titles are quite nebulous in television and film, from show to show to film to film. You know, an executive producer, though, in a nutshell, it's sometimes as far as television goes, is also known as a showrunner colloquially. And so you are basically responsible as an executive producer for the soup to nuts, from the conception to the final delivery to the network of the show. That is research, coming up with what episodes are going to be on the show, what an arc, if anything, of the show will be, and then hiring other producers to help you execute it, hiring editors, and overseeing the edit process as well until you deliver and it airs.
Right.
That's in a nutshell.
Well, that sounds like a lot to keep you busy, and you have executive produced a number.
So from the IT side, you're a project manager.
I guess. I am so stupid. I don't know anything about IT. I have so many friends in IT, and I just shrivel in their intellect. I really do.
Why don't you real quick just tell everybody some of the other shows that you've done, Dave? And I heard this on one of the other shows you did, that you predate IMDb. So you might as well just laundry list a few of them. So.
Yeah. I've been in television for quite a bit. I started, let me see, 1995 on shows for A&E. Show was called Mysteries of the Bible and Ancient Mysteries with Leonard Nimoy.
Wonderful.
And that was great for me. It was one of my first jobs in television. Actually, it was my very first job in television, working with Leonard Nimoy, and yeah. I'm a huge Star Trek geek, you know, so it was ridiculous to be working with a guy like that, you know, an international cultural icon.
Right.
But from there, I stayed in cable mostly, and with Discovery and A&E and History Channel. I did a show for, say, like, a third of my career now has been a show called Dirty Jobs on Discovery Channel, which lasted for 7 years, and that was quite popular.
Mm-hmm.
They still air it, you know, yes, to this day. We haven't produced it since 2012, but they still air it like marathons almost every other month on Discovery, apparently. And let me see. I know, and of course, for Travel Channel, I did a show called Bizarre Foods.
Yes.
Which is
with Andrew.
With Andrew Zimmern, who is a Minneapolis personality, and that's what took me to Minneapolis. And I worked out of the office there in Eden Prairie for a bit, for a couple of years. I was the executive producer of that show for 2 years until I left.
Jade and I both know Andrew very well.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So he does a lot for that community. He loves Minneapolis. And honest to God, you know, I don't know if there's anybody that knows more about food in America and perhaps the world than Andrew Zimmern. I mean, I love food and I love doing that show.
Did you ever eat any of the food?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, everybody always asks me that kind of stuff. I'm a very adventurous eater, and one of the reasons why I enjoyed being on the show was trying some things.
Right.
The main problem, though, I was getting a little frustrated because as the executive producer on that show, I wasn't out in the field directing or anything like that. I went to the first couple episodes, traveled with the first couple episodes, the two seasons I was on. So, but I was mainly in the office supervising the editor.
Right.
All the editors. And I wanted to get back out there and travel because I had done that for many years and I enjoyed doing it. So I left the show because I wanted to get back on the road.
Ah, yeah. Fascinating. So did you just get the footage back and you're like, I wanted to eat that. Why didn't I get to eat that?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. That was part of it. I mean, but they were going amazing places, you know, like Vietnam and Colombia. But, you know, I went to Pittsburgh and with the show, then I did go to Mexico City as well. Then some of the best food of my life was there, as well as Portugal, best seafood of my life in Portugal. Yeah. So, but I honestly missed out on a lot. I felt so I had to move on after 2 years.
Right. And now you are working on Straight Up with Steve Austin. You guys have, everybody can, if they're looking for something to binge, they can binge the first season, which is out there, and you would be working on season two right now, but unfortunately, like a lot of our friends, working in the entertainment industry, things are on hold while we are staying healthy and safe. So we hope that you get back out there very soon. But for people who are not familiar with Straight Up with Steve Austin, can you tell us what that show's about?
Yeah, it's basically sort of, if you're familiar with Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, I think it's called. It's that on steroids,
right,
if you can imagine. Instead of cars, we're riding in tanks and crushing cars, things like that. We did six episodes last season, and there was a pilot that also aired. We were slated for eight episodes this season, two of which would have been in the can by now. We would have shot two last week, unfortunately. Yeah. But it's one celebrity per show, and Steve interviews them in interesting settings and does fun little competitions and drives around in crazy vehicles a little too. So it's a fun show.
We have a lot of wrestling geek fans that not only, like last week we had a local wrestling favorite of ours who was on as our guest geek, and we do find wrestling culture just fascinating in general.
It certainly is. It's very widespread. I mean, you guys had a wrestling governor. Let's face it. I mean, it's out there. You know, I was into it when I was probably much younger, and then when I was 13 or so, I sort of got out of it. And, you know, I of course I knew who Steve Austin was. He's probably now the most popular wrestler in the history of the WWE.
Wow.
Literally, I think he's definitely surpassed Hulk Hogan in that regard. And they keep having him back just to show up for 5 minutes on TV, and their ratings spike. So USA wanted to do a show with just him, and it turned out very popular in our first season. So it's great.
What's the hardest thing about your job, Dave?
Whew. That's hard. A lot of people are like, well, how do you do this? How do you do it? It's crazy, you know, what you do. And I'm like, it's what I do. It's hard to articulate what I find hard, but, you know, because sometimes we have to move mountains as producers, and I don't mind doing that. We have to set up crazy things. You know, you have to find a tank. It's like, you know, in Los Angeles is like, you can find anything, literally, and in a very short time if you need it. But, you know, one of the things I dislike is having to whittle down some great footage and kill babies in the edit.
Right.
You know, it's like you have some, it's tough. You have to make some tough decisions of some really good content you don't want to lose, but just to fit time for a broadcast window, you got to cut down to an hour or half an hour. Whatever. I mean, a half an hour, of course, you know, in commercial television is only 22 minutes because of the commercials, right, and an hour is only about 44 minutes. 46 sometimes if you're lucky. So that's the most difficult thing for me, is losing good footage and entertaining stuff. But I'll have to say, in the last 10 years or so, a lot of these networks have, well, it's definitely out there, they've adopted the internet and put up a lot of bonus footage online, and I think that's great. You know, I think Dirty Jobs was actually one of the first to do that. We used to make a lot of footage just for the internet. We had little segments back in like 2008, 2000, maybe even earlier than that, with cameras that you can't even find software for anymore.
Right.
Every show almost has adopted that and puts a lot of bonus stuff for popular shows online. So, a lot of stuff we do lose does find a home. And sometimes it gets more of an audience online too nowadays.
Agreed. Agreed.
Is there a show you're binging on right now?
We just finished, Let me see if you know this show. Hold on one second.
Oh, no. Okay. Here we go. Oh. He has to go get something, everyone. He just ran away.
This is going to be interesting.
Oh, no.
No, you're not. Are you serious? How is it?
This is, you know what this mask is from?
Put it back on.
There he is.
Okay. All right, I have a picture of you with the mask on, so you can tell everybody what the mask is about, Dave.
Oh, it's right. This is mainly audio, correct?
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
You work in television. I work in radio. So right. One day I'll just film the whole thing. So.
It's a show that just ended on USA called Mr. Robot.
Yes.
It did 4 seasons and is probably one of the most brilliantly written shows I've ever seen in my life.
I've only seen the first 2 seasons, so I'm looking forward to just binging the next 2. Yeah,
I actually binged the first 2 a couple of years ago, and then I started over and did it all the way through just recently. We just finished about 3 weeks ago, and it's just phenomenal. I think the 3rd season a little tailed off a little. They lost their way a little bit, but the 4th season's great.
Nice. And they wrapped it up. It's all done.
Yeah, it's all done. It's like it completely done. And it's great because now I work for USA and I know someone who is affiliated with the show and they gave me one of these masks.
Nice.
So.
Nice. Well, I will add that to my list. I remember I only watched the 1st season of that and I've been wasting a lot of time watching The Tiger King and such right now. So I need to have like a quality show palate cleanser because.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tiger King. That's been going around in social media. See, I'm one of these guys, you know, I don't watch a lot of TV, you know, maybe because I you know, although we met through a television show, Shannon, so that's sort of ironic. And people like, you don't watch, you go to TV show conventions, you don't watch, I don't watch a lot of TV. And, you know, and when things get popular and people just want to talk about, I'll refuse to watch them. I'm one of those guys. So I don't want to watch
terrible the Tiger attitude.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't want to watch the Tiger King. I don't know, maybe one day if I'm not feeling too great about myself, which doesn't happen often.
So, oh, yeah. He loves himself.
I'll watch Tiger. Yeah.
But here's the thing. Jayden and I kind of are in the same boat as you are, Dave. We sat down. It's been a year now, Jayden. Can you imagine? We realized that although we live a lot in this geek world, we don't watch a lot of television either. We watch a lot of movies. And so to get ourselves back into watching television, we started a game called Pass the Password. So he has a certain number of passwords. I have a certain number of passwords for all the streaming services that you need in order to really be good at watching these shows. And then we pick something and we give each other homework assignments. And we say that you have to watch at least 2 episodes before you tap out. And so we have been able to up our television watching game recently. And sometimes we start something and then we fall off of it. And so then we go, okay, we move on to something else. But Jayden was actually the one, along with a bunch of my other friends, that brought up Tiger King. And he's right. I got sucked into this show. It's absolutely ridiculous. There's no redeeming values about it. It's super dumb. I did enjoy it in a very Schadenfreude sort of way. So
sure,
it was I don't feel like I wasted the time at all, but I'm
but
not
that was a
there.
Limited series, of course. Yeah. So, but I think a lot of people are, you know, reticent to try a new television show or an old one for that, because it's a time suck. I mean,
right.
Even if it's a 4-season show like Mr. Robot or something, it takes a lot of time. Movies are more digestible, of course. And my problem is I'm a completionist. If I start a show, I have to finish it.
Right.
Even if it's terrible. So that's why maybe I'm reluctant to start a lot of stuff like that. I mean, especially with something like Mr. Robot, which had a definitive story arc in the beginning.
Right.
Well, to bring you to what we brought you on the show for today, I feel like I need to give a little background about this as well, Jayden. And so this year at Console Room, we're all sitting around again at the bar. And remember, we're at a Doctor Who convention. And so we end up talking about extra hobbies somehow. And my good friend here, Dave Barsky, brings up this one hobby that he's into. And the thing that I think is so funny is he brought it up in a way as if we were going to clown him for being into something. Now, first of all, we're in a whole convention full of geek people. And he has the coolest job out of any of the geeks at this convention. So those two caveats. And then Dave brings up that he's into geocaching. And I was amazed, of course, because here's what I know about geocaching. And normally, Dave, I'll be honest with you, Jayden and I know enough about all of the geek-related topics that our guest geeks come on. We know enough about whatever you do to be dangerous. You brought this up, and I'm like, all I know is that I saw it in an episode of Law & Order, like, 20 years ago. There was a guy that was into like geocaching. And then I think he was the one that got murdered. I don't remember. And I know that I am a fan of the two more geek related versions of it because I play Pokemon Go and Wizard United. So you have no room to be even close to, well, maybe I'm in the geocaching like you were when you brought it up. So,
well, listen, I hear what you're saying, okay. But geekdom, you know, sometimes doesn't translate or cross over well.
All right.
So you just never know what people are going to think is nerdy. I mean, I've had another Doctor Who friend I met him in Vegas. We were both there for a broadcasting convention, and he didn't know about my geocaching. And I had to get one that day, and I wanted to get one in Vegas. And I said, oh, it's kind of nerdy. And he's like, yeah, that's pretty nerdy. I mean, you should see this guy. I mean, I'm not going to say who it is, but he's sort of famous in the Doctor Who community, and he's man. If anyone looks like Poindexter, it's
this guy.
And I love him; he's a great guy. But you know, he was calling me nerdy for geocaching, so hence my reluctance to broadcast it amongst other friends.
Well, how did you even decide to start doing geocaching?
Well, interestingly enough, it was during a television production, right after I left Bizarre Foods with Andrew Zimmern. I started a new show. I said I left that show because I wanted to get out more. And luckily, I got on a show that brought me out. It was called Expedition Unknown, which was on Travel Channel, which is now on Discovery Channel. And the first episode I was doing was on Christopher Columbus, and we do reenactments for the show as well as travel to places of interest historically. And I needed some props for the reenactment, so I went online looking for coins of the period of Christopher Columbus, and something came up called a geo coin, and I'm like, "What's a geo coin?" So I Googled it and immediately came to the geocaching.com website, which is the home for all geocaching. And, you know, geocoins are a whole nother aspect of this thing. They're little trackables with numbers on them. You can put in geocache. You put in a geocache and people just own them and they want them to travel. You don't keep them or trade them.
Okay.
But you just travel. There's so many tangents I can go off on geocaching. But anyways, so I discovered geocaching through my job, and I investigated what it was, and it's about finding stuff on trails and out in the world, and it's all over the world. And I immediately said, that sounds like something I'd be into. I love traveling. I love hiking, getting outdoors, and that could enhance the experience if I'm just doing a trail that I've already done. So I immediately downloaded the app. And a couple of days later, while waiting for my ride to the airport to Spain, I found the geocache that was closest to my house. And it was a crazy experience. It was this pill bottle in a tree, like a hole in a tree. And, you know, all you do is when you find a geocache, this was small, all of them have logs, and you just sign the log and you date it and you put it back and you claim that you found it online. And you can put a little log online as well. Now, as I said, you know, some of them are larger where you trade items and things like that. A lot of them are not in urban terms, but the ones out in trails have like our ammunition cans a lot. So they're big and you can put little items and people put the coins in them or toys for children and things like that. So, yeah, but I was like, this is pretty cool. And a couple of days later, I found one in Portugal.
Yes.
On the island of Madeira, and a couple of days after that, I found one in Spain. So my first three geocaches I found in 1 week in three different countries, and I thought that was cool.
So
do you
how long has it been now?
To these existing geocachers, or do you just kind of see what is out there and then you document it, take a picture of it, or document it on the app?
Like as we say, everybody plays the game differently. I mean, there are certain rules that the official company puts together. But it's a user generated game a physical user generated game, so you can do what you want. I sometimes put things in, I sometimes take things out. I do take the trackables out. I don't know if I have that. I used to have a bunch on my desk here, but I put them in my garage because, you know, I haven't gone out to bigger ones yet. But they're little items that you can pass. They go from place to place to place, and you log the code, and it tells the owner of that item where the item has been and what cache. And some of them have been around the world. And you can see a map online of where your little That's tracking cool. thing has gone. But the geocaches themselves do not move.
Okay.
They always stay in place, and things can move between them, or you can put things in them, or you can just sign the log. A lot of people take pictures of them if the cache is damaged or missing. That happens quite often, more often than you think, especially with urban caches.
Okay.
And who places these geocaching in the first place? Are these user put? Like, have you made one and put out somewhere in the world?
Yeah, the players themselves put them in the world wherever they want. To this date, I have placed, I believe, 32 of them that are still active. And there's also things, I've also hosted two events. Those also count as your hides. I kind of hosted an event this past fall when I went abroad for vacation, I went to Uganda. And on my way there, I went to Dubai and I hosted an event there. So any geocacher can come, and they're meet and greets basically for fellow geocachers. Unfortunately, and I did one in Entebbe as well. Unfortunately, you know, those are smaller places where there's not many active geocachers, so nobody showed up to either of those events. No. So, you know, that happens. It's fine. And I kind of expected it to happen. But what can you do? But yeah, anybody can place a geocache or host an event.
Okay.
Are there like geocaching cons or geocaching conventions, or, you know, how they have Pokemon contests?
Yeah. Well, these events that I mentioned that I hosted are sort of like that. Mm-hmm. However, you know, anybody can show up. So, you know, there's some locally in Los Angeles that, you know, maybe 10 to 20 people show up. They're monthly meetings with different areas in Los Angeles. However, there are larger ones called mega events. And there's also a couple of giga events. And it depends on how many people say they're going to show. Usually around, I think it's 500 people is a mega event. And there are some that are annually around the United States and around the world. This year happens to be the 20th anniversary of geocaching. Oh. The first one was placed on May 3rd of 2000. And this was going to be a huge year for the whole sport, as some call it. And geocaching.com itself, based in Seattle, was going to hold a huge, huge event where thousands of people from all over the world were going to come up to Seattle for. That's in limbo right now, actually,
right.
Because it was supposed to be held on August 15th. But a lot of these events are getting canceled, of course, because of what's going on.
Right. So when you are deciding, like, because you sent me a couple screenshots of all of the caches that might be in an area. So mm-hmm. Can you go, okay, I know I'm going on vacation to a certain locale. Do you scope things ahead?
Depends who you are, but I always do.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, again, there's a lot of ways to play the game, and there's a lot of people who are into geocaching or into numbers and statistics. And a lot of people just want to get numbers, just want to get as many geocaches as they want. And, you know, the top two geocaches in the world recently broke 200,000 finds. Wow. In the last couple of months, which is a lot. I've been in it for 5 years now, and I'm approaching 10,000 finds.
Wow.
You can cache, as they say, you can go out and find like a maniac. I've done as many as 300 in a day, but sometimes you just want to go for, more interesting ones on a hike. You only get two or three perhaps, you know, on a trail or on top of a mountain.
How do you do 300 in a day?
Well, they have these things called power trails.
Okay.
Where people, now you're legally, quote unquote, legally, the rules are every geocache has to be outside of a quarter mile radius.
Okay.
Of each other. So you can't place them. But there are highways in the desert, like Route 66 that starts here, well, technically ends here in the L.A. area and goes all the way to Chicago. But in the desert areas of L.A. and in California, people have placed a couple of hundred. I think there's about 500, over 500 on Route 66. And I did 300 on Route 66 last December in a couple of days. I did 300 one day and I did 200 the next day, I think. But there's desert roads out here in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's mind-boggling. On the California-Arizona border, someone placed 6,000 on all these roads. I haven't been out there yet, but I had a group of friends who last month, a group of five of my friends did 1,000 geocaches in a day.
See, and this is why we wanted to have you on the show, because normally we'll do a lot of research and figure some things out. And we started looking into this and we're like, that's a whole nother language. Let's just let Dave tell us and we'll figure out.
No, it certainly is. And there's a lot of avenues to talk about. I mean, there's just so many aspects of the game. Like I said, the trackables, which are those geo coins and other items that people place, you know, you can get a trackable dog tag and attach it to any toy or anything you want to it. And it has that number on it. And it's your travel item. And you can set a goal for it. Hey, I've never been to Hawaii before, but I'd like this thing to go to Hawaii. You know, it's all that kind of stuff. You know, and people have races with them. They put them all in the same geocache. And yet if someone finds it, they can only take one and they want it to get, you know, how far can it get? How many miles can it travel in X amount of months? You know, there's all kinds of weird things that people do. Like,
so based upon how broad geocaching is, what kind of fan do you consider yourself in it?
Well, like I say, a lot of people play the game differently. I want to get as many as I can. However, I'm not like I need to get all of them. You know, I'm not one of these guys. I like to accumulate numbers, but in a different way. I'm a geography nerd, so I want to get at least 100 geocaches in every state. That's okay. One goal I have, one soft goal I have. There's so many ways to do this. There's all these challenges too that people place, and you can find a geocache that's a challenge cache and sign the log, but if you don't meet that challenge at the time, you can't claim it as a find. But later on, months down the line, you can. In fact, the weekend I saw you last in January, a couple months ago, I signed a cache that was a challenge cache in Minneapolis called the Noel cache.
Okay.
And now what you have to do to qualify this for this find is you have to find 30 caches, one per day for 30 consecutive days that do not have the letter L, hence Noel, in the title. There's a lot of stupid things like that. So I started that streak of 30 days, 20 days ago. So I'm working on it right now.
Wow.
Going on right now. Are people more out there trying to geocache because you can do this?
Yeah. I mean, it's a thing you can do by yourself. And I've gone every day, you know, for the past month or so. People are doing it a little differently. A lot of times people go out together. I think there's less of that right now. All these events have been canceled. The events that I mentioned have been canceled or postponed. Like some of these mega events, there's supposed to be one in Kansas where the oldest active geocache in the world is actually hidden in the middle of nowhere, Kansas. They were going to have this event on May 2nd, and that's being postponed now. But the other thing is people still placing geocaches. I got what is called a first to find this morning.
Oh.
You know, a lot of people are more reluctant to get first to finds nowadays because they don't know who might have been, touched it recently. But a lot of people going out are ones that have not been found, since this began either. So the whole, you know, the distancing thing, it does come into play. And I have a friend who's a very active geocacher. I actually talked on the phone yesterday because I couldn't find a cache. And I texted him and he called me to see if he can help. It was missing, actually. I went geocaching in downtown LA yesterday morning.
Okay.
And, there was nobody. You know, there's a couple of joggers and a couple of people, you know, illegally droning the city, flying a drone to get footage of it. But there's virtual caches where you don't have to touch things either.
Okay.
And I did one of those.
Are a lot of the places that you would normally go to find these items, are they closed off to you now because of the things that are going on?
Yes, as a matter of fact, they are. And a lot of people are deactivating their caches so you won't encourage people to go into a public park where you're not allowed to go to, for instance.
Right.
So I know some people are deactivating their caches that way. All the trails in LA are now closed off. Luckily, I'm right on the border of Ventura County, and I can go hiking in Ventura County, which is, you know, a 5-minute drive for me, right? They closed off their trails actually for the weekends, but now I can go during the weekdays. So yes, they are, a lot of things are closed.
Well, we hope, like everything else, that things get to open back up soon, that we can flatten some curves and actually get out of the houses very soon for all of us. We can get back to work for all of us. And Dave, you can decide what you want to talk about next time you come on our show, because you're going to come on the show again, right? We get to give you back.
Yeah. See? Well, of course. I'll talk about whatever you want. I mean, there's a lot of crossover geocaching and Doctor Who, actually, believe it or not. There are a lot of caches that are Doctor Who related. People have built life-size TARDISes, you know, and they are geocached. In fact, on the Sunday, the last day, I think I saw you.
Yes.
I went down to Farmington, Minnesota, where there's a little free library that's the shape of a TARDIS and is actually a geocache in there. And I went with the owner of that cache. He's actually a very famous geocacher. He's a called himself the geocaching blogger, and he's got a YouTube site and channel, and he's he was the owner of that, and he did a little video of he and I going to see that.
I am going to make sure that we link to that video, because I have been you did share that with me, so I'll make sure I link to that so that all of our friends can see that as well, and they can see you before you decided to grow out that wonderful COVID-19 mustache that you're growing right now. Your isolation stash, is that what we should call it? Is your isolation stash
probably the best thing to call it?
Well, that's okay, Dave. I mean, I poke at you because I adore you. Our good friend Jayden, he cut his own hair last week, so the back of his head, he looks great from the front. The back of his head, not so much. So,
I fixed it.
How'd you fix
it?
How'd you fix it? Did you paint it in with a Sharpie? Did you
literally just go keep going shorter until that thing is there?
I got to tell you, I think it looks fine, man. It's great.
It was the back, Dave. It wasn't the front. The front looked great.
But he still did the front, didn't he?
Come on.
I mean, I got lucky. I got my haircut right before all this all started, you know, and my shop closed down. But so hopefully I'll be okay. I'm not going to attempt it myself. I can't pull up a chain pole.
Well, we'll see how long we end up in this isolation thing, because maybe you'll get brave. Because, you know, now's the time. Go out there. Be bold. Hey, if you can wander around in the desert geocaching, you can at least cut your own hair, Barsky. It'll be fine.
Oh, listen, if I can grow this mustache, I can grow my hair out. So I'm not going to worry about anything.
I will be honest with you. Because we brought it up at the beginning of the show. That mustache honestly doesn't look bad on you. And I normally am like very con mustaches. But that, it's okay.
Well, you know, okay. I bringing it like down below my lower lip. You know, my friends and I used to call this the asshole cop from 70s TV.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to go full asshole cop, but
So will you promise us this? You can think about what you want to talk about next time you come on the show. And in the meantime, we will get all of our BR Geek family out there to go watch the previous season of Straight Up with Steve Austin. Is that a good trade-off?
Well, yeah, that's fine, but I'd rather have them go geocaching.
Oh, okay. Well, we can have them do that too. So if they want to go geocaching, how do they get started, Dave?
Go to geocaching.com and you can download the app as well off any app store.
Jayden, I do need to check in with you before we close out. I know you're doing some changes over at the Twin Cities Film Fest. So what's going on over there?
Yeah, so obviously we've been wanting to do this for a couple of years, and obviously this is the right time to do it. We're actually launching a VOD platform on our website.
So a video on demand.
Yeah, video on demand, and it's called TCFF Streams. And we're doing a beta testing for the next month. Have 10 feature-length films. We're just doing a $5.99 pay-for-play for revenue splitting. Filmmakers directly giving them money. Again, who knows what's going to happen in October. I'm still planning a full-on film fest in October, but it just gives me a little bit more bandwidth. CFF Streams, and it launches tomorrow on our website.
All right, and that website is TwinCitiesFilmFest.org. You can always find that information and also information about our BR Geek podcast there. You can also find BR Geek on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at brgeekshow@gmail.com, and you can leave a message on our network if you want to go ahead and leave us a message for Message Roulette at 612 972-276-2774. Please like and subscribe, BR Geek, wherever you find your podcast. And we appreciate Dave being on the show. Dave, I appreciate your geocaching enthusiasm. We hope we get some new people out in the fold for you.
That'd be awesome. Thanks, Jen.
And everybody else, we appreciate you listening to the show. We will see you next time. And remember, we appreciate you because everyone is a geek about something.